This is Valley Voices. I'm your host, Amy Haddon Marsh, and today's show features a conversation with former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Dr. Albright was in Basalt this week talking about a book she wrote in 2006 titled The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs. She spoke with me by phone from her office in Washington, D.C. about the book and its relevance 11 years after it was first published. Madam Secretary, first, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs, was published in 2006. It's a book about religion and politics on the world stage. Why talk about this book 11 years after it was published?
You know, it's so interesting to me that I was actually asked to talk about the book because there's renewed interest in the whole issue about the role of religion in foreign policy. And I'm delighted to know that it continues to be germane and that I'll have a chance to talk about what motivated me to write a book like that in the first place, which was to understand that we couldn't separate religion from foreign policy, even though we believe in a separation of church and state, because so many of the issues that we're dealing with in foreign policy have some background or specificity with religious issues.
You write about morality early in the book. Talk about the difference between religion and morality and how that influences political decisions.
Well, I think that for me, anyway, morality is a basis to religion, which is trying to figure out how we treat each other. What is the right thing to do? How do we really respect each other? And so it's hard to separate them. What I don't like is when it becomes something where we define something in a moralistic way, which is to deprecate how others believe. I think one has to be very careful not to hijack religion, frankly, to not make clear what we really believe in, but have it serve a different purpose. Morality should be how we treat each other, what is the right way to regard other individuals.
Can you give an example of that in terms of a political decision that was made when you were with the Clinton administration?
What was happening in the Balkans that I thought was that a religious excuse was given for what was known as ethnic cleansing, which is for people that were Christians, Serbian nationalists, who decided to kill Muslims for no other reason except that they were Muslims. And so all of a sudden the policy was based on religion. And we believed the moral aspect here was to respect people for who they were and not just decide that because they were a particular religion, they deserved to be ethnically cleansed, i.e. pushed out of their country or killed.
Could you talk a little bit more about the U.S. involvement in the war in Kosovo and the morality behind the use of force?
That is a very difficult question, actually, and a very important one. I think what we saw was, as I just mentioned, that people were being killed for who they were, not anything that they had done. And so then the question comes up, what tools do you have for dealing with that kind of a problem? And you try very much to use diplomatic tools to argue or persuade in meetings the Serbian leaders to say, why would you be doing this, and you shouldn't be doing it, and we will help you if you've got particular economic problems, but don't kill people for what you believe in. We also tried sanctions, which was another way of trying to persuade them not to do something. The question then is, do you use force, which obviously is a very difficult tool to use out of the toolbox, and other people die. The question is, under what circumstances do you use force to kill people when the reason you're doing it is because they're killing people, but they are killing people for no reason. You are using force in order to stop evil from taking place. But it's always a hard argument. I think that if you use force in which people die, is that a moral issue? Very hard.
Early in the book, you state that, quote, political activists, not just Democrats, are agitated about the influence of the religious right on the White House and Congress. This is also a subject weighing heavily on the minds of diplomats, end quote. You also talk later in the book about how some Americans are convinced, on the basis of biblical passages, that Jesus will return to earth only when the Temple of Solomon is rebuilt and the climactic war between good and evil described in the book of Revelations is fought, end quote. Madam Secretary, do you think that U.S. administrations have governed in order to bring about the so-called end times, that they've governed with these prophecies in mind?
The truth is that I don't think that the people who actually make the decisions govern with those prophecies in mind, because they understand that they don't make much sense, frankly. But I do think that there are those who believe that then feel inspired by some leaders who say everything America does is right, that it says so in the biblical passages, which it doesn't. And I think there's a real question in terms of how those who have what I think are incorrect beliefs are inspired by too much rhetoric that would make people think that we have some, that the United States has some God-given mission to do things in a particular way. One of the hardest parts, I have to tell you, in terms of talking about religion, is always trying to pick out the right adjective or noun. There's always something that makes it more complicated to call somebody a fundamentalist. But people who read the Bible in a way that takes everything exactly the way it is written, I am sorry to say, have views that don't jibe with what is really going on in the world. I did when I was writing this book, and I still do, reading the Bible, and there are some fairly grisly parts in it which I think make it more difficult to use it as a policy, and especially if you believe that you are going to bring about, Revelations is hard to read, frankly, and I think for that reason, because it has some very peculiar predictions.
Well, I'm wondering, is this what you were describing as Christian fundamentalism, and I realize the difficulty using that word, is this strictly an American Christian fundamentalist agenda, or do European Christians subscribe to this?
I think not so much the Christian part, but what is interesting, and I did try to analyze this a lot when I was researching this book and then writing it, all three of the great Abrahamic religions have a fundamentalist part to them, whether it's Judaism or Islam. Any one of the people or the holy books in those religions makes it seem as if you follow this kind of fundamentalist path, you will be able to reach an ultimate goal. And I think in all of them, it's very hard to kind of justify what they're saying. I mean, there are some fundamentalist Christian people abroad, but what I preferred to look at in the book was there are similarities in terms of compassion, peace, respect for each other in all three of the religions also. And I think those are the ones that need to be emphasized, what the great religions have in common in terms of respect for each other and peace and recognition of similarities.
Well, you write about the Mosaica Association's Center for Interreligious Cooperation, and you state in the book that the premise of this project is that peace between nations and peoples cannot be achieved without reconciliation between religions and cultures, and that the power of religion must be transformed from a source of hostility to a source of tolerance and understanding. Could you talk more about this and possibly how it could change the relationship between the U.S. and the Middle East?
I have to say, I learned more in writing this book than in any of the others I wrote, because those were mostly about myself, and I knew that. I had to really study to do this book. And what I really think is that when it is possible for the three great religions leaders and people within their congregations to talk to each other and respect each other, it makes a huge difference. I happen not to like the word tolerance, because it means put up with. I think it's more important in terms of respect, and so that's how I have seen things. I also have been to a variety of meetings, international and some in the Middle East, where there are religious leaders who do, in fact, come together and then talk about what I said a little bit earlier in terms of the common themes of the religions. And I do think that having those kinds of discussions are very important. The question really is, to what extent do they then have access to their political leaders? And it depends, frankly. I think that there are various places where, and I've been to some meetings where this kind of interchange takes place. I would like to see more of those kinds of exchanges take place among young people, because what is happening in the Middle East, and every day one reads about this, is the very large number of young people who need to see each other in a different light. And so I think those religious leaders, the extent to which they can have interactions with the next generations, are very important. And there have been organizations like Seeds for Peace. Interestingly enough, Quakers have spent a lot of time in the Middle East talking about that, and I would like to see it. But it's not easy. But it does require, what I said earlier, respect rather than tolerance.
You're listening to Valley Voices in a conversation with former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Well, speaking of new generations, yours and my generations remember the 1950s, but what is your message to those who have been born since the year 2000 about American exceptionalism and the nature of religion in the 21st century?
It's very interesting because I do believe in American exceptionalism. I am an immigrant to this country. I am very grateful to the United States. I think that it is a special place, and the Statue of Liberty really does say to bring in the huddled masses. And so I am very troubled by some of the policies that are excluding people of different religions. But I really do think that what has to happen as far as younger people are concerned is to understand that we are an exceptional country, but we can't ask that exceptions be made for us in terms of abiding by human rights and by respecting others. I used to say that regularly at times when the whole issue of torture came up, that the United States has to be a country that understands that our exceptionalism does not allow us to make our way or the highway the only way to go. It means that we have an exceptional responsibility in terms of understanding what others are doing. I do think that younger people, it's very interesting because in so many ways, they are more educated about what's going on in other countries than people my age. But I really do think that then is this responsibility of understanding what motivates other countries, and back to the kind of respect aspect, and understanding that the U.S. is a special place, but not by insisting that everything be exactly the way we want it, and that we have to abide by morality and by human rights principles. And I think that it goes with the whole question about what is the role of the United States? Should we care about what's going on in other countries, and to go back to democracy? Democracy is the basis that people make decisions about how they want their countries run and have to have the freedom to express their views. And frankly, what I am troubled by is when we think that right-wing, highly selective approach to how others look have something to do with our policy, and that we have become ungenerous in terms of understanding other people's religion and their nationalities.
Well, one final question, Madam Secretary. You said that you had to study a lot in order to write this book. What surprised you the most in writing this book?
I think that what did surprise me, frankly, was who would have thought that in the 20th century that we were still talking about problems that had to do with religion. When I was at the United Nations, obviously the things that had happened in the Middle East were very important, but we also were talking about what was going on in Ireland, you know, Catholics and Protestants fighting each other, and that we had to understand more what the religious basis of the problems were. In the Balkans, it really was going back to Orthodox, the relationships of Christians to Muslims, how that related to what was going on in Europe. And so what really did surprise me was that all of these issues, that some of them that went back to the Middle Ages, were still germane. The other part that I found very interesting was some of the differences, for instance, between Christianity and Islam. And I really made a point of looking at this. Muslims believe that God is one, and Christians believe in that there's three in one. And for Christians, but not for Muslims or Jews, Jesus was the Son of God. Christians believe that Jesus died to atone for the sins of mankind. And in Islam, God forgives those who sincerely repent. For instance, in Islam, God forgave Adam and Eve, so there's no concept of original sin. And what I find very interesting is that a lot of Christians believe that Islam is overly legalistic and based on fear, and a lot of Muslims think that the Christians altered a lot of beliefs. So I kept getting more and more into this in terms of what the similarities and differences were. Now, what I also found interesting is that Jews and Christians believe and revere Jesus of Nazareth and Mary. So there are any number of things if you really dig into things. And what bothers me the most is that various elements in all three of the Abrahamic religions have misinterpreted various parts in order to hate the other. And that's the part that really I think is the problem, is that we're not looking for what we have in common, but some religions, or all of them, to some extent, have been hijacked by those who want to see the differences. And that's why I believe that there's a connection with foreign policy, and why our diplomats need to understand what the basis of some of the foreign policy struggles are.
You're writing a new book that will be published next year?
Yes. I have to say that I am deeply troubled by what's going on in terms of what, let me just go back on something. I think one of the mega trends that's going on at the moment, we all know about globalization and many people have been great beneficiaries of it. But what has happened is that it's faceless. And so people don't know what their identities are, and they are grouping either by religion or language or ethnic background, which I think is fine. We all want to have our identities. But if my identity hates your identity, it's very dangerous. And I believe in patriotism, but I don't believe in hyper-nationalism. And I am troubled by what that can lead to. So my book is about fascism. The working title is Fascism? A warning that we need to understand that hyper-nationalism can lead to a very dangerous form of governance where people's worst instincts in terms of hatred of others then becomes magnified and is very, very dangerous. And so I wanted to kind of explore that, not just in terms of comparing everything to what went on in the 30s or what happened in Europe, but what are the trends now that are bringing out this hatred of others, of a decision that those who do not believe exactly the same thing as you do, that they need to be separated, punished, vilified, and not respected in any shape or form. And I'm obviously going to learn an awful lot, and I have already, as I delve into the next book.
Well, Madam Secretary, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me, and I'll look forward to reading the new book out next year.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for asking such really deep questions, and I hope I didn't confuse people more with my answers, but I really do think we need to look at what the role of religion is in the various national security issues out there that we have to deal with today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to Valley Voices in a conversation with former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, who was in Basalt this week talking about her 2006 book titled The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs. Thanks for listening.